Welcome to Enneagram Conversations with Jackie Brewster and Courtney Barman, where you'll uncover and discover more about yourself and others through the helpful tool of the Enneagram. I'm your host, Julie Underwood. So today we are honored to introduce our guest, Mike Foster. Mike is a gifted leader, communicator, author, and television commentator dedicated to helping people experience God's grace and freedom. Welcome, Mike.
Good to be with you guys.
We're so thrilled to have you on the podcast today. I love that I got to see you a couple weeks ago at an event and got to hear a little bit about this new book that you have. So I can't wait to dive into some of that today.
Great. Looking forward to talking with you.
All right. So, Mike, we love to introduce our guests with some questions to get to know you. So here we go. What is your favorite type of food?
Ooh, probably Mexican.
Mm-hmm.
I can tend to load up on chips and salsa at the beginning. Very poor planning, and then I'm full once my entree arrives. It's not good.
What is one of your favorite summer activities?
Oh, I love to do absolutely nothing by the pool and just lay out, drink an iced tea, and read a book.
I love that.
I'm a hermit. I just love being planted and doing nothing.
What is an activity that helps reduce stress in your life?
Probably exercise, working out. I try to be pretty diligent with that, just mostly for the mental health benefits of it.
I feel like that induces stress in my life, but I'm so glad it reduces stress for some people.
I understand.
And now for the serious question, what is your Enneagram type and your wing, if you're familiar?
Yeah, I'm an Enneagram 5 with a 4 wing.
So this month we are talking about stress. So Mike, you actually have a new book out, The 7 Primal Questions. In this book, you help people learn how to manage stress, anxiety, and life's challenges. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, the book really addresses our hidden programming and the things that are happening under the surface, which really is to me, a catalyst for anxiety, depression, a lot of the dysfunctional or unhealthy behaviors that we go to. And so kind of in a nutshell, if we can understand that hidden programming, we can actually be in control of it and thus create less stress, less self-abandonment in our lives.
Okay. I have followed you for a long time. Like, I don't know how long, but you've been in the circle of people that my husband has known for a really long time. And so I've enjoyed your posts on socials for years. I'm telling you, years and years and years. If I probably have saved every single post that you do. You have great influence over so many people, including myself, in this area of understanding yourself, getting to know yourself better, of holding space, of healing, all of these different parts of it. You and I, approach the topic differently because of the tools that we're using. Like I'm choosing to use the Enneagram, but I do think you're familiar with the Enneagram, but I don't know to the depth of that if you studied it for a long time, because I feel like that language has been in your work for a long time. Is that true?
It has. I was introduced to it by Richard Rohr. It feels like 10 plus years ago when he was first talking about it. It may have been even longer than that. And so, yeah, it's been fun watching, because when he was talking about it, it was a very small little thing. And to watch it just grow and expand and the influence that it's had in our society has been remarkable. I love it. I love anything that's helpful to people better understanding themselves and then utilizing that tool to create growth and flourishing in their lives. And so I'm a big, big fan of it. I would say I probably know the basics and have not done the deep, deep dive into it because there's so much to it, obviously, as you guys know, but I'm a big fan.
It's interesting because at the event that we were at a couple weeks ago that you were on stage sharing about your new book, and so I just sat there taking notes and I'm like, yes, yes, yes. So much of it resonates with the way that I teach the Enneagram around unconscious childhood messages and heart longing message and really getting to the root of those things, because those are the motivators behind behavior. And so this book that you write, it is so good. And it talks about just, I think that motivation, what's at the root of this. And so I want everybody to read it, I guess is how I feel.
Well, thank you.
So good. And there's only 7, there's not 9. So it's not truly like, it's not parallel to the Enneagram, but it's so, so good.
Yeah. A lot of similarities. And I actually, one of the things that I hope to do, later on in the journey is to actually find more of the connections and more of the overlays with the Enneagram, because I think that just makes a tool more helpful, right? And anybody who isn't into the Enneagram, enjoys the Enneagram, this is certainly a model and a framework that will resonate with them. And again, it's a different thing. It's a different take. It's a different look, but a lot of similarities and helpful things for those who are into the Enneagram. Yes, for sure.
Yeah, it is not the same, like you said, but the way that you hold space is beautiful, and that same feeling exists as you unpacked it. So it was good.
So Mike, speaking of your new book, it has a focus on your past, understanding your past to understand yourself today. So you unpack 7 primal questions, which we've talked about, that have a great impact on people's lives. Can you share with us a quick overview of what those 7 questions are?
Yeah. So basically the premise of the book and the framework is in our early childhood, we get imprinted with a primal question, one question that went unanswered in our childhood or was confusing to us, like it was a confusing answer, or trauma played a role in forming the question. And so we have these imprints, or a primal imprint. Really, there's one question that sort of is most resonant with our childhood. And then what happens is we carry that question subconsciously into our adulthood, and we continue to ask it over and over again to our spouse, to our friends, to our kids, to our coworkers, to strangers. We're just constantly asking the question. And when the question is answered with a yes, the primal question is answered with a yes, we feel grounded, good, all is right in the world. The problem is when the primal question is answered with a no or a maybe, we go into what I call the scramble. And the scramble is all the unhealthy things we do to try to force the answer back to a yes. And so there's 7 questions. And this is a collection of, like, I've been over 4 years of research, 6,000 hours of one-on-one interviews with people, 22 group labs around the concept. So this isn't something that I was kind of like, hey, there's 7 questions. It literally probably went from completely open-ended at the beginning to allow people to say whatever they think the question is in terms of their imprint, to, like, I don't know, say 20 to 14 to 10, and then finally to 7. And these were the 7 that come up over and over again. And there could be slight variations of saying it or maybe a tweak or two, but fundamentally, the core 7 are what I have heard in all the research, and what I believe to be is the 7 primal questions that people have. And there's one of them. We have one that is driving everything, but fundamentally, all 7 represent an emotional need that we have, and that we like to get yeses to all 7 of these questions. But there's one that is fundamentally driving how you interact in your relationships and really with the world. And so the 7 are: question number 1 is, am I safe? Question number 2 is, am I secure? Which, the difference between safety and security, safety is really tends to be a bit more all protection, where security is about, do I have enough financial resource and relational resource to protect myself? Question 3 is, am I loved? Which deals with being seen, known, and heard. These people tend to really love, not love, but need to be in sort of this empathetic, connected relationship is really important to them. Number 4 is, am I wanted? And this is about the desire to be pursued by somebody, to be included, and to be welcomed. So these people tend to go into what I call this, you know, the scramble, all the dysfunctional parts when they feel rejected, either fully rejected or parts of them are rejected. They will tend to hustle for belonging in that point. At that point, question five is, am I successful? These people tend to grow up in very competitive homes where there was kind of a scoreboard of life, and you were always felt like in this constant competition. And so you get imprinted with the question, am I successful? Am I basically another way to say that is, am I winning? And if you're not winning, then it feels like you're a failure. And everything that you're managing is to try not to be a failure or to be incompetent. Question six is, am I good enough? Which has to do with really an existential question of, do I have the right to be here? Do my opinions matter? Do my ideas matter? And this question tends to get expressed two different ways. Number one, either through kind of insecurity. These tend to be perhaps maybe just, they live like a fly on the wall. They're very insecure. They're really like always testing, always making sure that what they're about to say is approved and okay with everybody. Because really there's a question around their existential value. Or the other way that it gets played out oftentimes is through narcissistic behavior or self-puffery. This is where there's an overcompensation around their value. And so they tend to pump themselves up in a way that is unnecessary, again, because they're simply questioning their value. Am I good enough asking that question? And then question seven is, do I have a purpose? And this is really about the idea of having meaning and significance in life and in things that they're doing. So what really sets these folks off and sends them into their scramble is doing anything where they fundamentally don't believe that it matters or is making a difference. And so these folks tend to always wrestle with purpose. Am I doing the right thing? Is this, like if they're religious, is this what God wants me to do? There's this ongoing angst around calling that they struggle with. And so, again, those are the seven questions. And the key is there's nothing wrong with asking the question. The problem is the scramble, all the things that we do to try to get the answer to a yes. And so the prescription, if I was writing a prescription for your primal question, it'd be simply to live in what I call the primal truth. We take the question and we turn it into a statement. So no, I'm no longer asking the question, am I safe? Which is, by the way, my primal question. I now show up each day going, I am safe. That's my primal truth statement. And so it just reshifts kind of my approach and the lens of how I see my life. Because if I'm living in this constant state of question, I allow an answer, whoever's answering it, to really take control of my life. Versus what I say is when we live in our primal truth, I'm self-answering that. I get to say whether I'm safe or not. I get to say whether I'm loved or not. I get to say whether I'm good enough, except to say with all seven questions. So that primal truth part is a big, big part in us really flourishing in our lives.
Do you find that there are people that struggle with more than one question that they kind of lean into, or do they typically just lean into one specifically if they really do the work to kind of boil down to that?
Yes, there's actually a thing called the satellite question, which is similar to wings, a little bit different in the sense that the satellite question is going to sit next to your primal question on either side. But the idea here is it's because all seven represent an emotional need that we have, it's very common to have more than one kind of core emotional need. And so that's where the satellite comes in. But frankly, like when people experience a lot of trauma in their lives in early childhood, a lot of those questions are going to be firing a lot of time. Now, I still believe what the research shows is a fundamental question that is driving everything. The other thing that often happens, and this is really interesting, is so there's obviously this early childhood imprint where you get imprinted with a primal question. But if you are experiencing trauma as an adult, let's say something is going on in your life. Let's say there's a divorce. Okay. You're going through a divorce. So you may have the primal question of, am I safe? Right. Or am I secure? But when you're going through trauma, we're going to fire up pretty much all seven of those questions in that season of your life. And so now you're managing, am I loved? Am I wanted? Am I successful? Am I good enough? Does my life have purpose? And so the framework says, yes, you're going to have one primal. There's going to be a satellite. But because we're very unique individuals and we have all the different sort of experiences in our lives, it can shift a little bit depending on, well, trauma. That's just the power of trauma, right? The power of negative events in our life and how we interact with them. So yes, to your question, you can have more than one question, but only one primal question.
As you're unpacking that, I have so many things going through my mind as you're unpacking all of this. It is like, yes, 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 around these, the ways that people try to get their needs met, because now we're going into coping mechanisms and defense strategies and all these different things. And that fear piece, that fight or flight response, that fear that comes in around, how do I get these needs met? What if, you know? But I love what you're saying is that you speak truth to those messages. And so we understand the work around self-awareness. And when we are self-aware of these messages, we actually gain control over our minds running away or the fear overtaking us. So I hear that piece right there around you speak truth to things. How much of this did you have to walk out in your own life to be able to do with other people?
The thing that I love most about the primal question framework is I use it every day in my own life. I became, as you know, again, this has been a long journey of kind of getting to this place of understanding these kind of imprints, these needs. And so what was really liberating in my own life is as I was doing the work and the research, was really identifying how the primal question has controlled and impacted my own life. So I'll just give you an example. So my early childhood, I had sexual abuse. And so I had a family friend who was abusing me. And so, and that's what's interesting too about this, my particular part of it, is that the imprint is primarily going to come from our caretakers, our parents or caretakers, but it can also come from a, kind of an outside source, especially when it's trauma. So that my trauma actually didn't come through my parents. Now there's perhaps a secondary part of my question that my parents did play a part in, is that we never really talked about, once I told them what was going on, we never really talked about the next steps or whether I was going to have to go back to that person's house ever again. And so fundamentally, as a kid, I'm not feeling safe. I'm not feeling protected by the adults. In fact, I have one adult who's hurting me. And so, you know, I have now been able to look at my own life, and I've done therapy around this. I've done, you know, this, I didn't start doing the work 4 years ago. I've been doing the work for a long time, but it was fascinating to me to see how much and how many of my choices were made through the question of, am I safe? I mean, I'll just give you a really basic one. I don't do anything where I might be physically hurt. So there's no jumping out of airplanes. There's no adventure sports. There's no motorcycles. There's nothing where I might get hurt, because fundamentally, I'm subconsciously asking the question, am I safe? And I want to make sure I'm answering yes to that. I'm protecting that space, that emotional need that I have. But here's the other thing that's really powerful, and it's probably the most important part of the framework, is that with our primal question comes a primal gift. And the primal gift part is we will take our primal question and we will place it over everybody else that we interact with. Okay. So when I'm interacting with you guys, I am taking my question, am I safe, and putting it over you guys and assuming you're asking the same question that I am. And then what I'm going to do in my interactions with you guys is try to answer it with a yes. And so what happens is that becomes a really powerful relational superpower that I have, because now for my entire life, people after about 5 minutes of knowing me would open up to me and tell me their deepest, darkest secrets. Okay. That has always been the case. Now that isn't because I went to school to learn how to get people to open up to me, or I'm not using any like voodoo magic tricks or anything like that. It's just happening. And the reason that it's happening is because of my primal question, am I safe? I'm placing it over everybody else and I'm answering it with a yes. I'm not sure what I'm doing, but I know that I'm doing it. And so what's really fun is when we can understand our primal question, but then have this enlightened experience where we now understand our most powerful gift, and how do we start deploying that into the world? So I found like with Am I Safe people tend to be a lot of police officers, okay? A lot of firefighters tend to have the primal question of am I safe? Because safety's just been, they've been swimming in that since their childhood. And so it's the very concept of their life. And so they're now using that primal question as a gift to their cities and their communities and what have you. Therapists tend to have a lot of the am I safe question. Also, am I loved? Therapists, that pops a lot with the am I loved, because they're very, am I loved, are very empathetic people. They're very caring and kind people, again, because they're taking their am I loved question and assuming everybody's asking that question too. And so the work is not only about like healing the parts of us that have been wounded, but it's also deploying the supernatural gift that we have because of our woundedness.
Do you find that some of these traumas can happen like in utero? Like, have you come across clients that have happened? Nothing really happened to my son when he was born, but I had an accident while I was pregnant, and I fell and like, you know, fell pretty hard on my stomach and had some injuries. So would you find that, like, have you ever found that in your research or maybe with clients or anything like that?
Yeah, I haven't done a lot of research per se around that with the primal question, but for sure, those sorts of experiences and in utero, whether the mom was going through a lot of stress or a traumatic birth or anything that would, those, again, we have to remember that when we're children and small and little people, okay, we're just human sponges. And so we're just absorbing everything because we're trying to learn about the world. We're trying to learn about how the world works, how love works, how safety works. You know, and when you have trauma, and again, a primal question isn't always trauma related. It's just something that was confusing in your childhood, and you just kind of continue to ask the question, right? Now, many times it is trauma related, but it isn't always. But yes, that would make a lot of sense that if there was trauma in utero, that safety perhaps could be a question that the in utero child might have.
Yeah, I know we're going real deep here.
But the other thing, and I'll give you a really practical part, is parenting. So how this applies to parenting is what parents will do is we'll take our primal question and we'll put it over our child. And our dominant parenting style will be based on our primal question.
Right. Be careful. Watch out.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, when I think about my own parenting, I parented from safety. I was the parent who was very concerned when my kids went over to somebody else's house. My wife, whose primal question is, am I loved? She parented from a very different place than I did. She wanted to make sure that my kids were valued and loved and knew that they were loved And she, that's the way she parented. And so we got to, as parents, we got to be aware of how we parent. We're parenting to our primal question. But good parenting, and I tell parents this all the time, good parenting is we're at answering all seven questions as best as we can with our child, not just our primal question.
This is so good. So interesting. My mom and I'm in Florida right now, like on a vacation stay. I don't know. I'm working from here for a little bit. But my aunt comes into town this week and my mom, and they have a lot of childhood stuff. They ask me lots of questions, but I'm going to go get your book and give it to them and work through this with them. I think that these primal questions, they make so much sense. They really do, Mike. Like this is just, even as you unpack it, I can see Julie too. We're both like, we need to go get that book like right now. I have it at home, but I need another copy right now. And it's so interesting. So let me ask you this question, because we do an Enneagram podcast and just, we're not tying your book into the Enneagram. They're two very, very different things. But I do wonder, with your Enneagram 5 in stress, you go to a 7, which we can see some more scattered pieces of the 5. You've experienced it, but like, have you been aware of that stress side? And has that played a role in any of the, like, you trying to get those needs met that you have?
Let's talk about the scramble. And the scramble is really the stress side of the primal question. And so one of the things that I will do with clients, or when I'm workshopping this with people, is help them identify what their scramble looks like. Because if we can understand, like, those behaviors and those things, we can then, what I talk about in the book, be self-leaders. We can lead ourselves better when our primal question is answered with a no or a maybe. And so for me, I'll give you a scramble from Am I Loved question 3. That tends to be like straight up codependency. Okay, so overgiving, over responsibility, people pleasing. That's typically how a question 3 is going to get their Am I Loved primal question answered with a yes in an unhealthy way. And so, but the whole book is about uncovering our hidden programming. Once we take what is hidden and bring light to it, you're now empowered to actually do something about it, which is really the exciting part about it. It's like, I'm not interested in awareness. Like, awareness is great, but unless we're doing something with it and it's actually making an impact, it's changing how we parent, changing how we do relationship, changing our marriages, changing, you know, helping us be better employees and better, you know, neighbors, then what's the point, right? So it's like, we have to bring really the dysfunctional things to light so we can then begin to work on it and say, okay, I know why I'm doing that. I know what's going on here. I'm on to me. And now I can choose something differently. That's the whole point of the book. And by the way, I should mention this. If you want to discover and know your primal question, you can go to my website and take a free assessment. It's like probably 6 or 7 minutes. It's about 30 questions. They're very simple. And you can actually identify your primal question and get, like, just knowing the question is such a great start for the awareness part. And you can start knowing, like, okay, how do I begin to use this? How do I use it with my superpower and my primal gift? How do I use it with knowing my scramble now? It's a really great kind of way to understand ourselves.
I always talk about with the Enneagram, I talk about awareness is the first step, and then acknowledgement, that piece that you're talking about. Like, what do I do with it? You got to acknowledge it. And then the growth portion, the pivot towards growth. What does it look like to actually do something with the information that you have? So I love that that's that same track. It's like, we don't need any more knowledge. We need to do something with it. Let's go. Let's change. And knowing that we as individuals have the power within us to begin to make those changes. I think a lot of us just need to hear that. You know, a lot of us need to know, like, you don't have to go to a therapist. You don't have to. Therapists are great. We want you. If you need to go, we want you to go. Having somebody to talk to is awesome. life coaches, all those things, they are great. But a lot of this work, it's just learning about yourself and taking the next step. And so go to Mike's website and take that test and do this, do the next thing, do the next best thing for you, which is find out your primal question so that you can grow and you can be the best version of yourself and you can love people well through that.
One thing I really love, Mike, is you said that you were an Enneagram 5, and I love that a 5 is very concise. And so you've taken the Enneagram world, essentially, that we, being 7s, we love more is more. Our bucket is has holes in it, and it is like, please give us more, 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 more. We love all the information. But I, my husband is a 5 as well, and I think he literally excelled at he takes things, he's an editor. So he can edit things down. And even as I'm talking to him, sometimes he's like, so what you're saying is this. I'm like, I'm saying all these things, you know? And so you've taken and you've put a 5 on the Enneagram, and we have put a 7 on the primal questions. So I kind of love that, you know, our worlds are mixing, and it's proving true. All of the things you both have said is proving true. So. I think that's pretty funny.
I'm a huge believer. That is my 5-ness coming out of simplicity, removing complexity. And this stuff is, it is complex. There's a lot of layers to it and stuff, but I'm a big believer. Like if we can keep it simple, then people actually take action on it. And so, I like things simple. I like things concise. The book is a fast read. There's lots of diagrams and doodles. So if you don't even want to read, you can just look at the pictures. I mean, it is a 5 type of book. I'll tell you that.
And it's so good. And it's bright, bright yellow.
Yes. Can't miss it.
Mike, would you mind sharing with our audience where they can find you to connect?
Yeah, for sure. So again, the assessment, free assessments at my website at mikefoster.tv. MikeFoster.tv. And then TV as in television, by the way. And not that I have my own television show, but, you know, maybe one day I will. But I'm on Apple TV. How about that? You watch my videos on Apple TV. But MikeFoster.tv is the website. You can do the assessment. You can also get the book there. And the book is also on Amazon. There's a Kindle, there's an audiobook releasing in a couple weeks that will be up there. And then on Instagram is probably the social media platform that I use the most. And that's just Mike Foster 2000, which is my Instagram handle. But yeah, I would really encourage people, if you're interested in this, this has piqued some interest in, you know, better understanding yourself and better understanding your relationships, your parenting. We didn't even talk about marriage, but the implications on marriage are huge. And I use this a lot with couples and couples counseling. And so, yeah, just head on over to MikeFoster.tv and we can start there.
So awesome. Thank you so much for being with us today. We've really, really enjoyed this. And it's always cool to see, you know, anybody that's willing to help others through the information and just through the techniques of 7 primal questions, the Enneagram, all the things. Thanks, Mike.
Well, thanks for having me on, guys. Great talking with you today.
Thank you for joining us today. Join us next time as we continue our conversations about the Enneagram and what it means for your relationships. Don't forget to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss a single episode. And while you're there, we'd love for you to leave a review. Your kind words help others find the show. For more great Enneagram content, you can follow Jackie and Courtney on Instagram at EnneagramWithJB and CourtneyBCoaching. To learn more about Jackie and her resources on the Enneagram, you can visit her at EnneagramWithJB.com. We'll see you next time on Enneagram Conversations.